Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Christy Hedges is a communications expert, entrepreneur, and certified leadership coach whose clients include Fannie Mae, VeriSign, the National Institutes of Health, privately held businesses, and global professional services firms. She's a leadership columnist for Entrepreneur.com and a speaker for Vistage International and the Founder Institute. She's author of a new book, The Power of Presence. Christy, welcome to Edgewise.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Obvious question. What is presence?
I define presence as the ability to connect with and inspire others. That might not be the definition that jumps to mind first when you think about presence. Typically, when people talk about presence, it's a very superficial definition. And it might be someone is assertive or commanding, or they control a room, or maybe they're motivating.
Right.
My clients are CEOs and senior level executives. And I was finding that this was coming up for them quite a bit. It's either they would have an intuitive feeling that they weren't using their presence in the best possible way, or they would get it on a performance review. Or it could be the board saying, oh, you know, Christy, this CEO, he's great, but he just needs to work on his presence. I would say, what do you mean by that? And I would get a superficial explanation. And they're not very helpful.
No.
But when you think of someone who has a great presence, it's much more than just how they speak or how they interact in a meeting. It's they inspire you. You want to be around them. You feel a connection to them.
Mm-hmm.
When I wrote The Power of Presence, it was that kind of definition that I started with. And I took an inside-out approach to how to develop presence in ourselves.
It's interesting. Words like presence or competency always implied or suggested the very base level. If you are competent in something, you weren't incompetent.
Right.
You barely got by. Well, he's competent. Presence meant you were there. But lately, in books like yours, we're not talking about just being there. We're talking about you're noticed. People are attracted to your energy.
Absolutely. It's called executive presence. And it conjures up this image of a Jack Welch type who is very powerful in a room. And that is definitely part of it. But it's really about being in alignment, being perceived the way that I want to be perceived. If you want to be perceived as someone who's warm and motivating, and yet you are perceived as someone who's aloof and uncaring, then you have an alignment problem. And your presence isn't exhibiting what you want it to. Now, of course, if you want to be seen as cold and aloof and you're seen as cold and aloof, then you have no problem. Your presence is perfect. But that's certainly not how most managers and leaders want to be perceived.
So what is the advice there? What can leaders do to be more present?
For almost all of us to have a stronger presence, we need to be more of who we are, not less.
Right.
If you think about the folks that you know have run across who have really inspired you or you think have a great presence, you felt like you knew them. There was a relatability there. Yet our culture tells us to put on a professional mask, and the standard of professionalism that we hold ourselves to at times makes us unknowable. So we don't feel that connection.
And how do you deal with that problem?
You don't have to be somebody that you're not. You don't have to be fake here. You have to take what is essentially you, and we all have great presence in various aspects of our life. We have it at home, or we have it with friends. You just want to bring that into the workplace, into situations where you feel that you really need to make a strong connection.
Okay, now how can I determine how others perceive me?
Let's talk about how it's usually done. We have a performance review, and we get feedback such as, your spreadsheets are fine, but you need more detail in your spreadsheets. However, your boss is very unlikely to say, when you talk, people tune out. Now, which one would be more important for your career? What we really need is a presence audit. We need to know how we are perceived. This is a very simple process anyone can do. You find five people that you trust to give you straight feedback. These can be coworkers, and if you're working on presence in your corporate life, that makes sense. And if you have someone who knows you in a couple different areas of your life, that can work well. So if you have a coworker you've worked with on multiple occasions, then they know your family and your friends as well.
So it's a more rounded picture.
Absolutely, because our presence is the same everywhere. It's the core of who we are.
Yeah.
And ask them two simple questions. What's the general perception of me? And what could I do that would make the biggest impact on my success? Now, you have to listen to what they have to say.
Of course.
Because the feedback that you get will only be as good as your ability to receive it.
Right.
As humans, our tendency is to defend ourselves a bit, maybe have some body language that isn't exactly hospitable, being closed off, or maybe even grimace a little bit because it might hurt. Our friends and colleagues, being the good people that they are, will then hold back. So you have to coach yourself a bit to be open to the feedback and just to ask clarifying questions. Don't defend, just ask, can you tell me how that shows up? Where have you seen that behavior before? And then take that gift that you've been given and do something about it.
So many of these things, the first couple of times you do it are awkward and you progressively become more effective at doing it.
It's just like anything else. With practice, it becomes more natural. And of course, we know from all the great research in neuroscience, so there's a reason for that. The grooves in our brain literally become worn down the more that we do something. And also, it just creates some confidence in us.
I'm sure it does.
It may feel awkward to ask someone to give you that kind of feedback, but if someone that you trust and you'd worked with for a while and you respect came to you and said, I need this feedback for my own personal development, you would give it gladly.
On a related topic, what communication mistakes do people often make that limit their influence?
The first thing is that they don't communicate. We certainly have never been a country that communicates profusely. We talked about the professional mask a little bit earlier. But that's gotten far worse because we don't even have to get away from our desks during the day. We can type and send instant messages, and every once in a while we even pick up the phone, but that's becoming less and less.
Sure.
Well, you can't be influential through keystrokes, but people tend to stay in their comfort area, which is behind their desk, and they're not making those all-important connections.
Right.
The second one is the importance of relatability and how people come to understand us in the various capacities of our lives. I have clients who are very successful and they're having problems with their team, for example, and I'll say, tell me about your team. And they'll only know all the most superficial things about the people that work for them. We need those connection points. We need to be more revealing about what we're thinking and what our hopes are for ourselves and for our team. And that increases our influence because people know what we're passionate about. There's also one that happens quite a bit, and I think there's a cultural aspect to it, which is this thought that in order to appear analytical, we need to be negative. And I'll give you an example. Go into any brainstorming meeting in any company today and throw an idea on the table.
Right. They take out their pointy sticks.
Yes. Let's jump on the idea because exactly. If I tear it apart, I'm going to look smarter.
Right.
The reality is we're never inspired by people who are negative. That doesn't influence us at all. If you want to be influential in a brainstorming meeting, try to get the best ideas out in the room. Facilitate.
Absolutely. Now, I have a question for you. Not everybody has the opportunity to be a hero. Situations don't always present themselves where you can rush in and save the day. There's a day-to-day routine you follow. There are the tasks that you're being asked to perform throughout your average work day.
Absolutely. But we should be looking for these times when we can stand out and show our expertise and show what we're about. I call these shiny moments in the daily grind.
Right.
They're necessary because most of us will stay in our jobs for about 4 years on average. 11% of us are self-employed, so that's a whole different dynamic where you need to go out and promote yourself. If you've been in your job for 18 months or less, 50% of you won't make it past that point.
No kidding.
We're looking at people who change around a lot. Now, this has been fairly static, by the way. But if you look at Department of Labor statistics, 4 years has been the average for a while. But 4 years isn't that long.
And what exactly does that suggest?
We need to look for those times when we can build that portable reputation because we never know when we're going to need it and we never know when we're going to take it.
Exactly.
If we don't look out for ourselves and our brand, then no one else is.
Okay, how can a person without that heroic opportunity stand out and get noticed?
Meetings are the number one place where people show up as leaders. It's a 360 view of someone's leadership capacity. We look at how organized they are, how they handle conflict. Can they get the best ideas on the table? We look at what kind of accountability is there. Did they do what they said they were going to do? Do they commit to things at the end of the meeting? And do they follow up? Those are all important leadership capacities that we see. And yet, people like horror meetings.
They're pretty bad, actually. Most of them are pretty bad.
They're horrendous.
Right.
But it's a wide open opportunity to stand out and be different. So if you're running the meeting, you can do some simple things like start and end on time. Respect people's time. Have an agenda ahead of time that you send out to everybody that says, here's what's going to get decided in this meeting. Have some accountability measures. Here's what we're going to do at the end of the meeting, and here's how we're going to follow up. Use the meeting for discussion and not to just go over routine issues that people can read on a spreadsheet. Again, respect people's time.
Absolutely.
If you're the kind of person who runs a meeting in that kind of way, much different than anyone else in the organization, your reputation will get around for that, and people will look at you differently.
Exactly.
People will talk about it. Of course, we all don't have the option of running the meetings that we're in, but as a participant in meetings, you can look at your role a little differently. Prepare ahead of time. Make a commitment to contribute in a way that's very positive, that's very helpful, and follow up.
Christy, what can new managers or middle managers do to be perceived as future leaders?
First of all, we lead from where we stand. Anyone can be a leader in their domain, at their job, in front of their team, in front of their company. Because it's definitely a mindset and not a title.
Yeah.
I've hired people who are right out of school and they emerge as leaders. That's amazing to watch. You could say, well, they're natural leaders. Perhaps they have some characteristics of that. And they pick the right things to get behind. They have the right attitude as well. One of the things the middle managers can do that's most effective is to consider yourself a visionary. This might sound a little bit crazy to people because they are imagining Steve Jobs or someone like that.
Right, exactly.
You don't have to be that person. You can be a visionary from where you stand.
And how do you do that?
A visionary will communicate in a little bit of a different way.
Mm-hmm. For instance?
There are four parts to that. The first one is that they're aspirational. They look forward. Mm-hmm. They're looking at the market and saying, we might be able to do this next. We could try this. We will accomplish this. And they're getting their team to lift up as well. We're never inspired by people who are negative. So talking about what we can't do is not going to make people feel good about coming to work every day. And it's certainly not visionary. The second one is it's personal. A visionary will pick something that they feel at their core is important and the right thing to do. If the leader doesn't feel it in their core, everybody else knows they don't feel it in their core and no one else buys into it. And keep it active.
Uh-huh.
We have almost an inability to see how important and current our vision is in other people's eyes. We say, well, we talked about that last month. I don't need to bring it up again. Well, you do need to bring it up again. You need to continually bring it up and to keep it active and embed it into the organization's values. Anyone can do this.
Mm-hmm.
I was working with a VP of marketing at a pharmaceutical company.
Right.
He was leading a team, not a big team. This is the cog in the wheel managers who are making it happen. He was trying to get his team to be more motivated. So what he decided is within this larger pharmaceutical company, he was going to set a vision that they were going to do the most creative work in the industry. That was what they were going to get behind.
Right.
He did a brilliant job of making it something that everyone could rally behind, no matter what was going on with the larger organization and the ups and downs of the pharmaceutical industry in general.
Right.
Now, for folks who are new in their career, there are two things that you can do. And the first one is so simple, it seems like it's too simple. It's do what's asked of you consistently. Just do what you sign up to do. Do a good job at it, deliver on time, and you'll be in the top 10%.
Yep.
I've talked to lots of managers around the country, and they say the same thing. If people would just do what I ask them to do.
Right, right.
Here's the second one, and this gets above the top 10%, and that's make powerful offers to others. Think of things in your organization that have to get done. Could be in your team. If we just did this, we would be so much more effective, and go to your boss and offer to do it. Say, you'll research it, I'll partner on it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to step too far out of bounds and see what they think about it. But it's amazing when you see that kind of initiative in someone, they're seen as a future leader.
We've been speaking to Christy Hedges, author of a new book, The Power of Presence, published by Amacom, a division of the American Management Association. Christy, thanks for being with us on Edgewise today.
Thank you so much.
AMA webcasts bring you 60 minutes of thought-provoking insight, specific answers to your management challenges, and conversations with renowned thought leaders. Best of all, they're all free. For a complete schedule of upcoming webcasts, visit the events calendar at amanet.org/events. We'd love to get your feedback on today's program. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.